got to there, that was closed, went to the BP, pie warmer was off, and I just kind of, I must have been staring at the pie warmer or something, because the lady behind the counter, we got three pies left. I was like, what are they? Because I'm vegetarian. So she said, a vegetarian and a vegan. I was like, I'll take them both. And she said, if that's the case, we've actually got two vegetarians and one vegan. I was like, all three of them. Practically ate them in front of her, and Jean's probably seen a million times, so it was completely normal to her. And this lady behind the counter is probably thinking, what was it, Friday night, but they're not drunk, and she's having a coffee, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and he's just eating three pies with nothing.
Kia ora tato, that was Andrew Robinson. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
This is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. Hey Eugene, how many things have you been panic buying from Wild Things?
Yeah, I think, is that a truck pulling up?
It's an Air Force helicopter.
Anyway, I went on the VIP, I got hooked in for the VIP
the lounge
discount.
Yeah.
You know, because anyone can shop on the Wild Things website, and they've got a range of excellent stuff, but if you're the VIP member, get the ka-ching,
you get the discount. What did you buy?
Oh, what didn't I buy? I just clicked.
You just clicked on stuff?
I just clicked on stuff. I panic purchased. Started because when I was running on Sunday, you know how your bottles start to leak?
Yes.
Yeah, and a leaky bottle.
Right.
It didn't end there.
Need a new bottle?
Yeah, and it didn't end there.
Right.
Just keep going. Anyway, I've got a truck turning up, so I have to keep going. Can we get going? You can hook into these VIP savings if you sign up and use the code DCR2021.
All caps.
Yeah. You get VIP membership for 15 months for the price of 12.
Yep.
And what happens is at the end of the month, Mal is happy. And
we're happy.
He sends us a little as a way of saying thanks for people using the DCR code. So if you use the DCR 2021 code, you get something out of it.
We get something out of it. Mal gets something out of it.
Everyone's
you join
happy.
The community. Everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Do it. Wildthings.club.
Mm.
Hey, Eugene, I got a confession.
What's that?
You know, last week when you were like, there's a new pocket on my Zygos that you put your phone in. I was like,
when I said new pocket, it's been there all along, but I didn't know about it.
I found a new pocket and I was like,
you were going, I knew about
that pocket.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that pocket. I actually, by accident, when I was going out for a run, found it. And other people have been reaching out to us saying, we also did not take the time to properly investigate our Zygos pack when we purchased it.
Yep.
And we have found that, you know, carrying our phone in our pants or in a belt around our waist, like animals, where there's just that you can, a little repository, you can put it in there, keeps dry.
So
fantastic.
Last week I was telling you about this pocket and you're going, yeah.
No, it was dismissive.
Yeah. You were very dismissive of me, but it turns out you didn't know about it either. And I heard from someone else, no name's Petra, who said, this is embarrassing, but I've been using this vest every week and washing it and stuff, and I'd never noticed it either.
Amazing. There's actually someone posted up on our Instagram as we are recording this saying the same thing. Good news, ultraspired.co.nz have the Zygos 4 finally back in stock in the large size. The Ultra Flask 550 and the Soft Flask 500ml option, so you get a normal thing and then those Marathon de Sable kind of sticky outy straw.
Is that a drink bottle?
I think it is. Not an antenna.
I thought it was an antenna.
I think you're getting a bit wrapped up in this whole 5G vaccine thing.
No, it wasn't that. I just thought it was, I thought people were like taking precautions for like not getting lost.
Right.
I thought it was a Garmin thing or something.
Two E-perbs.
Yeah.
For a run around Riverhead.
No, but what is it?
It's a soft flask. Like they're coming into fat. They're the coming thing. It's the sticky outy thing.
Yeah.
Tom Wickram had them the other day.
Yeah. I'd be worried about falling over.
I put my eye out with it. Yeah, so the Zygos 4, large, finally back in stock. Fantastic pack, our go-to pack. And the Ultra Flask 550s and the Soft Flask are back in stock with any kind of option. You want to get your normal kind of one and then the weird poke your eye out.
Hey, look, if people want to get like decent advice rather than our advice where we don't even know about the pack until we...
discover
about the pack, you know, years later.
Yeah.
Where should they go?
Ultraspire.co.nz.
There you go.
It goes something like further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Oh, further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Dirtchurch Radio.
Kia ora e te whanau and happy Waitangi long weekend.
And well, it's now Wednesday, so.
Well, when we're recording it, it's a long weekend, man. We do long weekends. We've got the longest drink in town. We've got the longest long weekends.
Yeah, true. True, true, true.
For those of you, is anyone out there taking off? Are they having like a bougie finish work on the Friday, have the whole week off, go back to work on the Monday after Tarawera?
True. I know that quite a few people took the days off between Auckland Anniversary Day and Waitangi weekend.
Oof.
Got the old, you know, the old free holidays.
Basically. That's right. Anyway, episode 129.
We made it.
We made it.
We did. And we did.
What a...
Well, we're just standing, but we're only just standing. Well, we had a run this morning in the forest and we got to the end of it and we were pretty smashed. We've actually done lots of... I mean, we've done so much running together, but we've never really done a workout together.
No, we've never ever done a workout together.
But today we did 3 hours, including 5 times 5 minutes hills.
And I did a 10-minute.
You did a 10-minute thing as well. And we just ended up, we ground ourselves into the ground.
It was amazing.
Coming down Yellow Bucket, which is the last sweet, gentle little trail back down to the car park. We were sort of
just like, Jesus, well and truly had taken the wheel by that point. But it was fantastic.
It was good fun.
It was good to
bumped
get out.
Bumped into Bruce?
Yep, bumped into Bruce. Good.
Hey, Bruce. Yep. Had a good chat.
Coach's orders and get out and do it.
Yep. So. And I must admit, I needed a little nap this afternoon.
I tried to have a nap, but then my legs were so sore I had to go. I had to get home and sort of went out for a little recovery jog. And it was a good thing to do. But man, speaking of people who needed a nap this afternoon, Andrew Robinson, our guest, probably needed a nap this afternoon. Mm. Brooke Thomas definitely needed a nap this afternoon. And it was so good to have her on the show last week.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I thought she'd be sleeping for a month and we wouldn't get her on for ages. But she was keen, and it was great to have her on. And what a legend.
Absolutely.
A legend. Yeah,
amazing and heaps of amazing feedback, and that community is so strong. And I don't know if you've thought, we were talking about this morning, one of the amazing things, unintended, thinking about, we've had so many people within the community on for a long time now on Dirt Church Radio, and it just feels so good because there's so many people doing so many cool things. And
Cool little place. And we should sort of pair these episodes together.
Absolutely.
Brooke and Andrews. And there's lots of the way that Brooke sort of brought other people together.
Yes.
In the way that she did. And Andrew's much the same. So absolutely. Andrew Robinson. So if you haven't heard, he became the first person to complete the 10 Great Walks of Aotearoa in 10 days. You know, just the logistical and running challenge.
And paddling challenge.
And paddling, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we mentioned his feat a couple of weeks back, and it's awesome to be able to have him on so soon afterwards to talk to us about it and give us the lowdown and some of the high and lowlights. It's amazing to hear these people doing incredible adventures and to hear, you know, no disrespect to either of them, but they're normal people.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? They're not superhumans, are they? You know, they're determined individuals, and they've got something about them, and they get out there and do it. But they can, you know, you can take away quite a bit from what they do. One thing I was sort of conscious of is that we've had a bit of a run of people doing epic, huge, long missions.
Yeah.
You know, Ian Evans and Brooke Thomas and now Andrew. But look, just for the record, we just really want to say we're into the short stuff too. You know,
running is running.
Yep. And whatever surface, whether it's trail, whether it's road, whatever, and whatever distance it is, whether you're just trying to, you know, you're setting out on your first run around your block, or you've got a park run in mind, or you are going to run a 100-mile race, that's cool.
Just get out
and do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think about myself, like, lucky enough, well, we're both going to be on the finish line together as it's transpired at Tarawera. I am so excited because I get to start the 21K.
Yeah.
I get to start those people off and I get to welcome those people back in. And there's going to be 700 people.
Mm.
It's going to be so good. That's the one that I am most excited about. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Get into it.
Hey, I just wanted to do a little update too, because our merch, our shirts.
Yep.
What have we got? We've got many left, have we?
No, we haven't. They're flying out the door. So We're out of men's large. Mm. We've got a few medium left. We've got a couple of XL left. Yep. So if you would like to get at us, it is dirtchurchmerch@gmail.com.
Yep. And you can have a look on the website. Yep. If you go to the website, you can see a page there that's where you can see the design and stuff. But, yeah, there's not many left. So jump in and grab some if you want. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. How have you been, man?
Look, today's been a perfect day. It's been in 2 short weeks in healthcare is a recipe for a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked. Today's been perfect. Hung out with you all day, 2 runs, lots of good food. Going away next weekend, get to go to the Tarawera summer camp, mm-hmm. you know, and just hang out with people and hopefully get a run in, although I'm not fancying my chances, but I'll do my best.
Yeah.
I'm with you, man. Like, let's mandate 4-day weeks and stick a universal basic running income in there while we're at it.
That'd be good. Yeah, I've really enjoyed having these 2 long weekends in a row.
Yeah. And my legs hurt.
Yeah,
my legs hurt. I just like to report that for the,
for the record. But I am really looking forward to next week, next weekend. Pacing Gene, he's doing the 100 mile, and he paced me last year, so I'm paying him back. Heaps of people going down or coming up and doing it and looking forward to catching up with lots of them. And then it's funny because, like, I'm not racing, obviously, but I've still had to train for this.
Yes, you have.
I don't want to let him down, you know. At the end of the day, I'm still running 45 kilometres.
Brutal.
Over some hills. So it's been a funny little position to be in.
Yeah.
To have feel a little bit more pressure than I would have if I was just training myself. So, I'm looking forward to. I'm going to get a bit fresh this week. I'm not having a tape or anything, but just looking forward to freshening up a little bit and then getting back into some decent training.
Yeah,
really looking forward to Wutu K later in the year. And it's been good fun to have some good sessions like that one today. It was great fun. Nearly did kill me. Hey, I wanted to report. I went out fishing last week.
Yes.
Turned tradition on its head, really. Got bitten by a fish.
I bet you had the last laugh.
Yeah, well, I did. But that was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. Not so much for the fish. Not so much for my thumb, to be fair. Anyway, that was all. Yeah.
Harry Kibbe just thrown his laptop across the room in disgust.
He has.
Patrons. Look, we can't do what we do without your support, and we'd love you to come on board. And if you set up a regular donation, even for the cost of a cup of coffee a month or a one-off koha or donation, it would help us do the things that are a bit outside our reach at the moment, like buying audio equipment to improve our sound quality and getting more racers to interview people. And it would help keep the lights on, you know, cover costs like the website, domain, calls, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, we'd love to have you on board. And if that's not in your wheelhouse at the moment, we fully appreciate that. And we love having you on board, as there's no differentiation between anything. So welcome. We're here. We love it. So patreon.com/dirtchurchradio. Stuff you should
know. Right. So it feels a little bit like calm before the storm.
Yep.
So no races on this weekend, but big races coming up. So you've got Tarawera this weekend.
Yep.
You've got Old Ghost and Shot Over Moonlight Marathon.
Yeah.
On the 20th, which is another race that we've got to get to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the Goat on the 27th. So it's just going to be hot, hot, hot for the next couple of weeks.
Halata Riverhead Rampage.
Well, I was going to come to that. Yeah. So
I just got to put it up there. We've got to put it in lights.
Okay, right. Put it in lights. So Tarawera this weekend is, we've got Ruth Croft's going to be there.
Yes.
Katie Wright's going to be there.
Yes.
Dawn Tuffrey's going to be there.
Yes.
Fiona Hayweis is going to be there.
Yes.
Caitlin Field is going to be there.
Yes.
Michael
Voss is going to be there. Carl Reed's going to be there.
Yep. They're going to be there.
I'm pretty sure Kunal Rajpal's going to be there. Super fast.
Yes.
Flies under the radar.
Right.
Just like smashes out and everything.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Caitlin, we caught up with her down at Tarawera last year, and she was talking about having hip surgery.
Yeah.
And she was still sort of humming and hawing about getting it done because it was going to mean a long recovery. But she jumped in and said, okay, I'll do it. And then wham, all the races got cancelled. Mm. I mean, you know, you wouldn't wish a pandemic on the world, but pretty great timing.
It's great to see her back. She is one of the I really loved that interview that you did with her. And if you have the pleasure to follow her on Instagram, she is one of the smartest and funniest people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
she's incredibly, yeah, what a talent.
And she set the record in the 50K last
year. She did. She's backing it up.
Yeah, she's got, you know, one to watch down there. Yeah, Carl Reed, I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes in the miler. You know, he went with Vlad last year from the get-go,
yeah,
and just lay it down. And then, you know, obviously sort of the wheels came off.
121K in.
Yeah, at Okataina. But he's back this year, and just looking at the training that he's been doing, and it's going to be interesting. It's really going to be interesting. Yeah. Hey, just tell us, I did cut you off about Riff Ram. So
no, it's fine.
Mr. Co-Race Director, how's it looking for 2021?
So, Halitau Riverhead Rampage, we've had some big changes to the committee. We've had the COVID thing happening, you know, like it's another thing to do on top of everything else that we do. But yeah, we had a meeting today. We're all up and running. It's going to be the eighth running of the event. It's
what date's it on?
5/10/21K, March 6th in Riverhead. So come along. It's cheap as chips. It's a registered not-for-profit. All money goes to the Riverhead School to buy sports equipment and to basically, so the money doesn't go to like things that don't involve well-being and physicality. Yep. So that's where it's sitting. And cool. 8 years sponsored by Halitau, prize giving at Halitau afterwards. Come along.
Which is always good fun.
Delicious good beer. And the trails are mint.
Yep, they're mint. What's happening with the, because there's a lot of forestry going on in the forest.
No, we're good.
You're all good?
We're good.
Yep, you're all good. We'll sweet good. As, sweet as. Any course changes coming up?
Nope.
Cool. So
so if you want to go onto the website is riverheadrampage.co.nz. I've put up a course description for the 21, the 5 and 10.
Your course descriptions are epic.
I do enjoy a good course description.
Yes.
And
even if you're not doing the race, go and look at those because they're worth it.
So, but the 5 and 10 is always a surprise each year, but Rebecca's cooked something up that's brutal.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
Amazing.
Right. That's a lot to look forward to over the next few weeks. Right.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be that time you dressed up in zebra print tights and fanged it about in Jackson Hole listening to Queen. It might just be a run around the block, something that sung to you for some reason. You could send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Ellie Ernst. Hi, Matt and Eugene. I'm a greatest run ever repeat offender. I love greatest run ever revisits.
Absolutely.
Previous post-injury 1 kilometre lap around my local park. I remember that one. But I'm going to the far end of the spectrum now with an ultra DIY adventure that Katie Wright and I completed 10 days ago, and we're still buzzing, so it probably fits the criteria. The Ruahini Main Range Traverse from Comet to Limestone, aka CL, came on my radar at the end of February. It's a similar concept to Tararua SK, but longer and with a lot tougher terrain. God, being less travelled. Of course, like most things this year, COVID disrupted plans of an April attempt. So from November, I had been patiently waiting for a 48-hour weather window. In the meantime, I managed to talk about it excitedly enough that Katie was keen to join me when perfect weather and low river levels presented mid-December. I don't reckon you'd have to twist her arm to do much stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right.
So together, we tackled the rugged terrain of the Ruahini, starting at 10:30 on Monday morning in a random car park and running and hiking non-stop for 39 hours until we finally climbed over the sty at 1:43 on Wednesday into another random car park when my mum surprised us by appearing out of the dark. Aren't mums awesome? Yes, they are. There was no fanfare or medals or finishers photos apart from one tired-looking selfie by the sign, but we received so many messages from family and friends and workmates throughout the whole adventure. Everything went so amazingly well, it still feels surreal. It was such a special experience this year with a friend in the place I love the most. Definitely one I remember for a long time to come. Ellie. She's got a cool dog too. His name's Tucker.
Really?
Yeah. He matches Rigby in terms of stoke and pine cone.
Fantastic.
Obsession.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. So I believe that Ellie is pacing Katie at Tararua this year. So
deadly.
Watch out.
Those hunting
two
you down
are going to be amazing. Those two wounded. Amazing athletes. Great runners, and so and another greatest run ever. Thank you, Ali. The rest of you, send them in. We really do need some. The pot's getting a little bit low, and so send them in to us, and we will get them on the show. Right.
And remember, if we see you at Tarawera and you so much as utter, "I've been meaning to send in," we'll have a pad and paper with us. Mm. We'll sit down and make you write them out.
Same goes with, look out, there's a mountain lion behind you. Don't say that.
Do you get that a bit now?
Yeah.
Really?
I've had it.
Wow.
I will accept, "Hi, Matt."
Yeah, that's cool.
That's okay. Yeah.
Right, Andrew Robinson was not a natural athlete growing up. It wasn't until he started university where he started pushing a bit of tin around and got into powerlifting and then CrossFit and then gradually into obstacle racing. He has gone overseas and done the world's toughest ultra, or the world's toughest mudder, which is basically like a 24-hour long tough mudder, incredibly difficult. COVID cancelled his plans, and he put together the idea of a first known time of doing the 10 Great Walks in Aotearoa in 10 days. From the jump, there was challenge, there was things to overcome, and there was plans to be changed. And he looks like he handled it with charm and aplomb. And this is a great conversation with a very engaging individual. So, you know, without further delay, Andrew Robinson.
Dirtchurch Radio.
On the line from Queenstown, we're speaking to Andrew Robinson. Andrew, kia ora, how are you going?
Kia ora, really good.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Yeah, man. What an achievement. How are you feeling?
Pretty good. Just a really, like a kind of, I guess, a deep tired. So on the surface, I'll be absolutely fine most of the day, and then eventually I'll just need to sneak away for a 20-minute nap at some random point in the day.
Yeah. Which is not bad considering what you've just achieved. Give us the stats, because they're quite phenomenal.
So it was a total of 469 Ks of running with 16,600 metres of elevation gain, and it was 148 kilometres of paddling on the Whanganui River.
Wow.
That was done in 9 days, 9 hours and 45 minutes.
Wow. And how's your wrist?
Wrist is good.
Your wrist was playing out, wasn't it, from the paddling?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so second day on the river, I started to feel it. And I think I used the poles for – I definitely used the poles for the Tongariro on the afternoon after the river, and then I used them for probably one more day after that, and then I just
– That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And injury-wise, anything else? I mean, you had an ankle issue as well. Is there anything sort of still nagging you, or was it just general fatigue?
Just general fatigue. I think the ankle, I think both of them were just kind of a very mild tendonitis. So the ankle was feeling fine now as well. It was just a bit of a tweak towards the end of the heafy and played up for a few days, but it was okay towards the end.
Brilliant.
I mean, I guess starting at the beginning, whatever possessed you to undertake, you know, the 10 Great Walks in Aotearoa in 10 days? Where'd that idea come from?
Somewhere a long time ago. For me, it only feels like it's been around for a few months. Apparently, I floated the idea to a few friends a few years ago before I think Paparo was even spoken about. So initially, I was probably thinking about the 9 and 9, which had been done, but I just wanted to do something pretty crazy. But I always had these goals to do overseas obstacle course races, which is kind of my background.
Right.
And obviously, there's a little hiccup that the world's faced recently, COVID, which has stopped us from going overseas, which means I haven't been able to compete, and I just took the opportunity that was in front of me and ran with it.
Huh. So you were competing over, you were attending overseas competitions as an obstacle racer?
Yeah.
I understand with obstacle racing, it's akin to, if you say like you're a runner, there's a wide variance of lengths, difficulties, kind of, there's that sort of stereotypical, you get an electrocuted, is he going under nets, to that kind of Spartan thing where you're carrying a log and making your own sandals and doing all sorts of stuff like that. Where did you sort of, what was your lane?
Well, I did one in 2013, thought nothing of it. There was just one with, raise a bit of money for charity with the business that I was working for. And then in 2014, I decided to up the ante a little bit, and I decided that I wanted to do two laps of Tough Mudder in Auckland, which was down at Hampden Downs.
Huh.
And so got on the first, you know, the first wave, and happened to talk to a guy, Matt Ainsley, who I ended up running that lap with, and then ran the second lap by myself. But he went on to run World's Toughest Mudder, which is a 24-hour version of Tough Mudder in the desert in Las Vegas. And so I followed his journey and said that I always wanted to do something like that. But it was always, you know, 10 years down the track when there's enough money in the bank and so on and so forth. And it wasn't until I quit my job in 2015 to hitchhike Europe that I thought, well, if I can do that, then I can just put my money where my mouth is, buy a ticket to World's Toughest Mudder and go and run it, which I did.
I remember I had the pleasure of running with Matt a couple of times in Riverhead.
And
have you met Matt Ainsley?
Yeah, I think he came out of the run that I was on.
He's
a
unit. Yeah. There's no other way to describe him. He's an absolute unit. There's Tough Mudder, which sounds tough, and then the World's Toughest Mudder. So it's just doing a Tough Mudder for 24 hours, or is there more to it than that?
No, it's just a Tough Mudder for 24 hours. It was just a Tough Mudder for 24 hours. So the length of course is half the length. So instead of being 5 miles, instead of being 10 miles or 16 kilometers, it's 8 kilometers. But there's the same amount of obstacles. That's 20 to 25 obstacles over 8 kilometers. And you've just got 24 hours to complete as many laps as you can in that period of time.
And what are the obstacles?
Anything from monkey bars to, as you say, carrying logs, crawling under nets. The electric shock therapy is always a good one. One of my favorites, just for throwback's sake, I guess. Do you guys remember Operation? The game players? So they had a life-size version of that, which they had about 10,000 volts going through a metal ring, and you had to thread a metal pole through this ring and hook off a little rubber bracelet and pull it back through.
Oh, wow.
That was quite fun.
As long as you didn't have to remove anyone's bread basket, that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. Take your own appendix out while getting electrocuted. Yes,
no.
Hey, just to check, that siren is nothing we need to be concerned about, was it?
No, it's just a...
local volunteers or something.
Yes, it is.
Volunteer fire brigade. Yeah, that's right.
It's going down now. Yeah,
so you want to make sure you didn't have to evacuate or something.
No, not too many tsunami threats down here.
No. Hey, so once you had, I mean, if this idea that had been around for a few years, and then you make a decision, yeah, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. But making that decision involves then sort of kicking off a bunch of logistical, you know, decisions and getting things together is just so hard. So how long did that process take you to put together, and what did it involve?
Well, I tried putting it together since kind of the end of last year, and probably since November I was trying to put it together.
Yeah.
And nothing was happening. Nothing was clicking into place. It just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So I eventually picked a date and I said, right, I'm doing it on the 20th of January, and announced it with nothing in place. And from there, that's when people started to kind of put their hands up and said, you know, I just asked for help, really. Yeah. And I had a guy, Edward Vedder, down here.
We're going to get to that. That's actually some of it. We don't have many notes, but that's one of the notes that we have.
Mm.
So we'll put a pin in that, Mr. Edward Vedder.
Yeah. The name's brilliant. Not spelt the same as the Pearl Jam lead singer, unfortunately.
There you go.
Yeah. So he put his hand up and said, yeah, I'll drive you. And I thought, fantastic, because before I'd announced it, I had a few people put their hands up to drive for a few days, and they were going to pass me on to the next person and so on and so forth. So they did that, and then I approached New Zealand Travel Motorhomes, who helped Tanya with her mission to Northburn.
Yeah.
And they gave up a Mercedes Sprinter, which was fantastic. Wow. And then I approached a friend of a friend who was a kayak guide in Milford for some kayaking lessons. And after hanging out with him for a couple of hours, I asked him if he wanted to do the entire Whanganui River journey with me, which he initially said no. And then after a bit of arm twisting and telling him I'd do it over 2 days, he finally gave in and, he joined along, Josh Hartle.
Fantastic. Wow. And, I mean, you had a bit of a knack of getting people to help you out and getting people involved, not just helping out, but getting involved in it as well. The legendary Jean Beaumont as well jumped in.
Yeah.
And yeah, so how did you meet her?
So we were driving up. I'd only heard about her, as you say, legendary is kind of the epitomal word. And I'd heard many a thing about her. And I was on the Inter-Islander ferry and I overheard a conversation. And I don't know why I started listening to this, or, you know, eavesdropping to a certain extent, was, it's his third attempt at the race and he's finally completed it.
Huh.
And obviously this was a week after the Revenant or a few days after the Revenant. So I leaned over and said, you talking about Ian Evans? And she said, yes. And so I said that, you know, I'm friends with Ian, I live down here. And we ended up talking and she invited us for a shower and a smoothie as we drove back through Wellington, all going well after Waikanaimoana, Tongariro, well, all after the North Island.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it became more than that, didn't it? Which we'll come to, I guess. Yeah, let's
It went from a smoothie and a shower to, I think, quite a good friendship. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She answered the
call.
She answered the call, all right. And that's one of the things, I mean, with this, you know, like it sounds... it sounds logistically difficult. It sounds like if you have the... if you have the wherewithal and the determination and nothing mechanically goes wrong, it's absolutely achievable. However, on day one, you were faced with the fact that you were kind of sunk, really. So what happened?
So we got up 4 a.m. and we got up at 3 a.m. We started Waikaremoana at 4 a.m. We knew the weather was pretty average, but we'd kind of come so far, and unfortunately we just didn't have the time frame to be able to push it back any days.
Uh-huh.
So got on Waikaremoana, finished Waikaremoana and started driving towards Tongariro. Waikaremoana went pretty smoothly, although there was a lot more elevation gain in it than I expected, about 2,000 metres versus the expected 1,300. Started driving towards Tongariro and I called Taumarunui Canoe Hire and asked them if they could put us in the water that afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And the reason being is if I could get on the water that afternoon, I could probably finish it by Thursday night and then do Tongariro Friday morning.
Right.
And the reason that I had to kind of do that was because unfortunately the Inter-Islander was sold out and we couldn't move the ferry timing, which was 8 p.m. Friday night.
Yeah.
So they unfortunately couldn't put us on the river because of safety briefings, which is, wholeheartedly understandable.
Uh-huh.
And so we just said, okay, well, let's go to Tongariro and let's just kind of see what happens. So we headed up there and as we got closer, we just, you know, we thought, well, all we can do is go as high as we can get, and if there's a weather window, then let's go through it, and if there's not, then it is what it is. So we did just that, and we got to about 1,500 metres, and funnily enough, there was actually a sign at about 1,200 metres which said, if it's beautiful weather, go ahead, and if it looks like this, definitely don't go ahead, and it looked worse than it looked in that photo.
Yeah.
We just thought, well, we'll just go up as high as we can. And there was a dock ranger who we had a brief conversation with. He knew that we were switched on enough and had the gear to make the right call if need be.
Yeah.
So he let us go. And, yeah, we made the call not even halfway to the top. We turned around, head back, tail between our toes, and got back to the car. And that was a pretty difficult conversation. It was kind of, you know, why finish it to a certain extent? Like, right. If it's not 10 and 10 – what's the point? And then Eddie and Josh kind of just said, look, if you truly actually want to inspire people by doing something like this, they're going to be more inspired by you doing 9.3 great walks than you pulling the pin on the first day.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
So I said, cool, let's go to Taumarunui. Let's do the river.
So your original plan was to do both those walks on day one.
Yes.
But you're thwarted. You that's it. It's just not going to work getting that second one done. And you're locked in because of the ferry and so on. That's, I mean, you were kind of stuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How was that feel? How was that feeling?
It was pretty gutting. But at the same time, I guess some form of stoic philosophy was, you know, what's done is done. So as Eddie and Josh both said, look, if I'm going to inspire people, it's, you know, we just started calling it 9.3 rate walks. And we just kind of accepted that to a certain extent. But once we arrived in Taumarunui, I guess I got a second wind and I was like, nah, I'm not going to give up that easy. And started making a few phone calls.
So scheming. Yeah. So it's you and Eddie Vedder and Josh, what's Josh?
Hardle.
Josh Hardle, right.
Yeah.
And you're together. And Josh is running with you?
No, Josh was my kayaker.
Right. Oh, that's right. I apologise. And so it was you and another runner on the Northern Circuit, or you were by yourself?
By my Eddie started the Northern Circuit. We just had to get done.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of going to hike it, and Eddie's a strong kind of multi-day hiker. So we just set off, and it was a slow jog until we got to the climb, and then we just backed right off to a walk.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you wake up, what, early on day two, and the intention is to get as far down the river as you could, or what was the plan?
Yeah, so, I mean, so that night I called all my family members and said, look, I mean, if you know anybody with a private jet, like if that's what it takes to get it done, let's figure it out. And then the goal was to get up at 6 a.m., briefing at 7, on the river at 8, get to John Cool Hut, which was about 100 k's down the river on day one.
Yeah.
And then finish off day two, and then drive to Wellington to catch the 8 o'clock ferry, because the drive from Taumarunui to Wellington was about 4 hours, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up the next morning, though, the second day of the river, and Mum's cousin had sent me a message saying there's an 8 a.m. flight from 8 a.m. Saturday from Wellington to Nelson.
Yeah.
So I just said, if you can book it, the boys can drop me off at Tongariro. They can then drive to Wellington, and I'll figure out a way of getting to Wellington. If I have to stick it out at night time, so be it. But
right,
I'll get there. And so, that was Thursday morning.
Yeah. Huh. So you're paddling down the river. You've got these plans percolating in your head, but you're out of contact, aren't you? That's what happens when you're on the river for a lot of it.
Yeah, definitely. So the first kind of 15 to 20 Ks, you're in and out of reception.
Yep.
And then you've lost it for the rest of the river. Then you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
What's the furthest you'd kayaked before? 93 kilometres is a long way in a boat.
Distance? A couple of laps of a pool?
Right. An Olympic swimming pool or a para?
No, just a normal pool. So I did a lesson with Bill Godsell to learn how to do a wet exit so that I didn't drown. And then I did an hour or so. It was on the lake, but it was just around the boys out in Frankton Beach. So
Wow.
So 2 hours of paddling.
Okay. So I'd like to sort of jump back a little bit, because I mean, already your first day, you know, you got Lake Waikaremoana, that's 48K. Northern Circuit is what?
Well, Tongariro Crossing.
Sorry.
46. Yeah, 46. Yeah. Tongariro. Yeah. Northern Circuit.
Sorry, you're right.
So that's 46. So you're looking at a 90-kilometer plus first day. I mean, what was your approach to training? Because I understand that you haven't always been a natural runner.
No.
So what was your approach to training for this?
For this, it was just general physical preparedness, really. I mean, I've done, so I'm not a natural runner by any means. I've been running for about 5 years, but I went straight into ultra distance stuff just because I know that I'm good at suffering.
Right.
A lot of this was, have you guys heard of Ross Edgley?
I was just going to say, I've just read The Art of Resilience, and I was just going to say, when you said stoic philosophy and then you said general, I said, I bet he's been flipping some tires in his preparation for this. He's
exactly that.
Slamming some war balls into the ground.
100%. Yeah. So with The Art of Resilience is the book that I was actually going to reference, is he was, you know, as in his mind, as long as he was in the water, he was moving forward.
Yeah.
On the 29th of December, I probably had my toughest run ever, where I got lost out in the Rees and Dart Valleys, and I ended up with heat stroke and hypoglycemia, and luckily there was a sports doctor at the Dart Hut. So I got back there and he kind of sorted me out. I took a 20-minute nap and then I managed to get out, but I averaged just shy of 5 kilometers an hour. So I knew that as long as I was on a track putting one foot in front of another, I was doing 5Ks an hour. And even a 90K day, that's 18 hours.
Yeah. So basically you are running. However, you're supplementing that with strength work and just sort of general physical readiness.
Because being an obstacle racer, obviously you've got that background as well, and you had a background as in powerlifting as well. I understand.
I've done a little bit of powerlifting, a little bit of boxing, a little bit of Olympic lifting, a little bit of everything. I think my training at the moment would most resemble CrossFit.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe two to three hours of CrossFit style training per week.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a lot of running and a little bit of mountain biking.
Yeah. What, when you say you, one of your talents is you can suffer, what do you mean by that? Where does that come from?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. It's just a stubbornness and a resilience. Just, you know, it's pain, but I mean, I can tell the difference between detrimental pain and pain that's temporary.
Mm.
And if it's temporary, it'll eventually go away. So it's just about kind of pushing through until you get to the end of that, and then you can, you know, enjoy your beer or your burrito or whatever's at the end.
Yeah. 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 So you've just developed a mental toughness around that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I think a lot of that training has come from just putting myself outside my comfort zone.
Mm.
And whatever it is just, you know, whether it's cold showers or swims during runs and training for obstacle course racing and going straight to 24-hour obstacle racing, you just kind of look for the toughest way around anything.
Yeah.
Because you know that you're going to suffer at some point, so be ready for.
Mm. Wow.
Okay. So you and were you having just read that book, you know, that he talks about sort of wintering your body and wintering and basically there's, you know, sort of shellacking yourself essentially. Were you counting how far you were running, or were you just going out? Were you looking at sort of speed work, or was it just getting out and putting one foot in front of the other?
For training, you mean?
Yeah, for training.
Just time on feet. I mean, for something like this, it's just resilience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Day one, it's not day one that you've got to worry about. It's day 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah.
Oh, I would say 10, but 10 was actually relatively easy. So day 9, 1 hour. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The tough one.
So you're scheming. So you're clinging to the idea of doing these 10 and 10 and by your fingertips at the moment. So you're going down Whanganui River. You've got your family to book your flight, and you're scheming to get back up to Tongariro to do the crossing.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
To do the circuit. So, yeah, where does Gene Bowman come into this?
So that's when I mean, Gene had given me a number to, as I say, smoothie and a shower. I gave her a call when I had a bit of reception, and I said to Josh, I was like, I'm going to call Gene. And he's like, he kind of looked at me like I was a crazy person, like we just met her on the ferry 2 days earlier. What are you, you know?
Yeah.
You can ask. So I call her and I was like, would you be happy to drive 4.5 hours from Wellington to Tongariro, run the circuit with me, and then drive me back to Wellington? And she said yes. It didn't even sound like there was hesitation in her voice. She's like, yeah, that sounds like an adventure. Let's do it. So that was just the biggest weight off my shoulders. And
wow.
I mean, realistically, I still didn't know whether or not the weather window was going to allow us to do Tongariro, but I knew that we had another shot, so that's what counted.
Wow. So it comes back alive. So you knew that was happening end of day two, but you still had a bit of paddling to finish off on the river for day
three. Yeah,
well, that was only
10 paddles into the river, so I still had, that was only the start of the day, really. Yeah.
So it was the simple matter of another 53 kilometres in the kayak and then a drive back to Tongariro and then the Northern Circuit with Gene Beaumont and then that's like another 4 hour drive to Wellington?
Yeah.
Starting at 10.
We finished Tongariro just before, I would have been about 9:30, we finished Tongariro.
Mm.
And it was such thick cloud, like it felt like it was raining. The amount of density within the cloud, it was pretty crazy.
Mm.
When we finished, before that, it was just perfect blue skies and everything. Finished about 9:30, got back to Wellington about 2 a.m., brushed my teeth, into bed, up at 6, and drove to the airport.
Did you get a smoothie? Did she come through on the smoothie?
No, she did one better. She gave me a good espresso coffee the next morning.
when you're doing these runs, you're going through some stunning, stunning countryside, and that Northern Circuit is an example of that. Are you getting to enjoy it?
Yes. Yeah. Not as much as you would do if you're doing it over a couple of days.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. That, you know, you've got to stop and. One person said, you know, how can you smell the roses if you're going through them that quick? It's like, well, you still are. You're still taking your time.
Absolutely.
You're not
sprinting the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Tongariro was probably one that I enjoyed a little bit more. I never knew there was about a kilometre-long section of pumice on the Tongariro, on the Northern Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're pretty much running on pumice. It's, yeah.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And I mean, yeah, you're running with the legend.
Yeah.
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 So how are you feeling at this point? Like, your adrenaline must be just surging. You're back on track. It's day three. You've gone down. You've done this. You get up the next day. How are you feeling at this point? You're nearly halfway. Is your body okay?
Pretty ecstatic. Body was okay. It was tired, pretty obviously. But there was one more logistical thing that we had to get past, which is the water crossing at Awaroa on the Abel Tasman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the only thing that I knew that we were able to control time-wise. I knew that if for any other reason we weren't able to do it, it was out of our control.
Yeah.
Right.
But the one thing that was still in our control that we had to do properly was get to Awaroa on time to be able to cross the estuary.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You did have another logistical issue, I understand, involving the BP at Taihape.
I've been to the BP at Taihape.
They I don't know what time they turned their pile warmer off, but it was before we got there. So
so this is after a day of finishing a 53K paddle and then doing the northern circuit, you rock up at the BP looking for some food.
Well, I'd forgotten. I don't know why it just escaped my mind to put food in my bag for after the run. So,
right, because the camper van's gone ahead to catch the ferry. That's the problem, exactly. Isn't it? Yeah.
The camper van's long gone, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The boys, they packed my night bag. I didn't even know what I had. So couldn't have done it without them, genuinely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? There's three people that I genuinely could not have done this without, and it's Josh, Eddie, and Gene. Were the three people that really held it together.
Yeah.
They put everything in my night bag. I had no idea what I had, but I got back to the car, realized there was no food apart from a bag of crisps and some coconut water, which wasn't really enough. headed south. Gene mentioned McDonald's. I was nervous about the thought, but at the same time, I was like, oh, I can get a big thing of fries or something. And got to there, that was closed, went to the BP, pie warmer was off, and I just kind of, I must have been staring at the pie warmer or something, because the lady behind the counter, she said, oh, we got three pies left. I was like, what are they? Because I'm vegetarian, so she's like, she said we got two pies left, and she said a vegetarian and a vegan. I was like, I'll take them both. And she said, if that's the case, we've actually got two vegetarians and one vegan. I was like, all three of them. And
you bought them out.
It's just this ravenous. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stinking like a polecat, wild-eyed in there. She's been using the vegetarian pies as doorstops.
Yeah. Because I'm sure. No one's going to buy this.
Yeah. Practically ate them in front of her, and Jean's got 10 million times, so it was completely normal to her. And this lady behind the counter is probably thinking, what was it, Friday night, but they're not drunk, and she's having a coffee, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and he's just eating three pies.
Yeah.
That was nothing.
Are they mother and son? What's the relationship?
What's going on here?
And that's the thing. You read these legendary encounters right through adventure lore. Like, I remember reading Dean Karnazes' book. It was Run. It was the 52.
Yeah.
And how he came into him and his dad got bounced out of a shop because basically the guy surmised that they were trying to grift him.
Oh,
you know, yeah. and so they got kicked out. But you hear about these stories, and it must have been incredible. So then
she's still telling the story, probably.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
from the service station, you're not going to believe what happened last night.
Yeah. I mean, what are you eating during? How are you fueling?
So the first few days, I ate way too many one square meals.
Yeah,
and they're amazing, but in moderation.
Yeah.
And I got pretty sick of them. I probably ate five or six each run So eventually kind of backed off and went on to the Jelly Babies, dark almond, Whittaker's chocolate, salted nuts, and dried bananas, whole dried bananas.
Wow.
And that was pretty much what I ate, with a couple of one square meals and a whole lot of Pick's peanut butter.
Yeah. And were you eating once you got back to the camper van, or? Like normal food?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the boys generally had some. There was always a smoothie, protein shake with some microgreens and stuff in it, and any surprise of pizza to burritos to whatever, ready to go. So
yeah. All the food.
Yeah. All the food.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get to – so day four, you fly into Nelson and, yeah. and you manage to get yourself to the Abel Tasman to be able to do that water crossing.
Yeah, so we got to the other end – and I thought that I was going to have to – I had about 2 hours to do 20Ks, which on a, you know, on a normal day is not too difficult. But after 3 days of what seemed like hell with probably about 8 hours of sleep over those 3 days yeah. as well, it was going to be an ask. So I – just before I got there, though, I had a friend – actually a mutual friend of Matt Ainsley's and mine, another obstacle racer. He said he was staying at what's the big campsite on Abel Tasman? I forgot the name of it.
Yeah, it's going in my head too. Yep.
Yeah. So he was staying there and he had a couple of kayaks. He said, I'll meet you at Awarau with the kayaks. And if the, you know, if the tide's too high, we can just kayak across. And I thought, fantastic. So I took 3 hours to do the 20Ks and the tide was nothing what Doc had expected. And we still just walked across.
Brilliant.
Water didn't even touch my pants. So it was perfect.
Yep. Yep. Fantastic. And then day five is a big one.
Yeah.
That's an enormous run. The Heafy track.
I loved it.
Yep.
Yep. Started, what time did I start? I think I started about 4 a.m., 4:30 possibly.
Uh-huh.
And the stats will be on my Strava. But, yeah, started about 4:30, I think, and it, as the sun was rising, I felt to be in the middle of nowhere is probably the most isolated I've ever felt, and it was amazing. It was just rolling hills with native bush in every direction, and The Heafy's, it's only about 1,300 metres over 75 kilometres, so it's quite undulating. It's not very steep, which made it really movable. It wasn't a slow grind up steep hills, and it was just good fun to just jog down average gradient and hike up average gradient.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Did you run your solo?
Yeah, the Heafy. So the two that I did solo were the Heafy and Waikato Moana, and right. the rest I did with somebody.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, yeah.
And were you bumping into people when they were walking it and they're kind of looking at you, trotting along and giving you the side eye, like what's this guy up to?
The Heafy, there was a small period of time around kind of Mount Perry that I was probably a little bit sleep deprived, and I was having conversations with myself. I remember thinking of Johnny Bravo and then kind of talking in a Johnny Bravo voice, and then that transitioned into an Elvis Presley voice and talking to myself and the camera and whatever. I don't think anyone saw that, but no, it was cool to have conversations, and some people would ask me if I was doing it in a day, and I learned pretty quickly to pick who I would actually tell what I was doing to.
Yeah, right.
Right, yeah.
Because some people just wouldn't really fathom it. Oh, 10 great walks in 10 days, and they'd go, oh, so when did you do the last one? Yesterday. Oh, so when are you doing the next one? Tomorrow. So some people just. But how do you get from the North Island to the South Island? Same way as everyone else?
I don't know.
I guess that's the thing, isn't
does
it?
It does not compute.
Yeah, you almost have to write it down. Like you'd be like, you'd be like that Charlie Day meme, writing, you know, the conspiracy meme. But the I guess it's that thing, isn't it? Because you think about 10 great walks. And if you've done any of them, I mean, they are all of them in their own way. They're incredible things to
do. I'd say they're great.
And
just, you know.
Yeah. I was trying to avoid bearing the lead on the great thing. But, yeah, they're great walks. They're pretty great. And it's a really New Zealand thing, eh?
Yeah.
What sort of walks that? It's a great walk, mate.
They're great walks. Yeah.
And to do 10 in 10 days.
I do have to, just sorry, speaking of great walks, I'm still confused as to why Kiwis call 148 kilometre paddle a great walk, but
there is that. There is that.
Fantastic. I've never figured it out. One day.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, you got to day six, which was the new one.
Yes, Paparoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the newest one, and it's one that I really want to get onto.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about that.
It's stunning. It's probably one of the most diverse in regards to starting. So we started at Piperiki, which was on the coast. So you could see the coast as we were kind of climbing up, And then you come around and it's just big rock faces everywhere, rolling hills. The thing that really grabbed my attention was the Goblin Forest, which is right in the middle. And it just looks like a whole 3-4 kilometer long stretch of what look like mossy bonsai trees.
Right.
Wow.
They look way older than they look size wise, if that makes sense. And just covered top to bottom in just a thick, dark green moss.
How beautiful.
And it's interesting, isn't it, when you're running through, and Eugene and I don't disagree on a lot, but one of the things we do disagree on is Lord of the Rings. And if one of us happened to be a fan of the books and movies and one of us didn't, you know, like when you're running and you think, wow, that looks like a movie set, or that looks like how you pictured, you know, this great kind of adventure, sounding like, you know, the Goblin Forest, that's quite an evocative name. It must have been pretty, again, it adds to that sense of adventure, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think a lot of the great walks really do speak to the Lord of the Rings. Which one of you, so one of you loves it, one of you really doesn't?
Look, you'll have to go back and listen for clues. So we're both avid, and interestingly, we're both avid readers.
Okay.
And one of us loves Lord of the Rings and Tolkien and that whole literary tradition, and one of us really doesn't. However, one of us reads a lot of fiction, contemporary fiction, and one of us doesn't.
Okay. Mm. Right. Right.
Yeah, I'm
we're a potpourri. We're complicated.
I'll put my hand up.
I've got some digging to do now.
I'll put my hand up. I've never watched it.
You've never watched it?
No.
If it makes you feel any better, my partner hasn't either. She's from Scotland. She's been here 10 years, and she's never seen it. Yeah. So,
I was actually living in Wellington when they were being released, the first two, and I, for whatever reason, I didn't get around to watching the first one, and then I'm not big on fantasy. That's not my
just
thing.
Just had a knock-on effect.
Yeah, and then it's the second
it's
one,
history. It's a fantasy.
And then the second one comes up, and it's like, oh, I'm gonna have to go back and watch number one before I watch number two. Now we're looking at 6 hours, and so then, how many were there? About 47.
Yeah, there's 106 of them. But
I mean, the math just got me. The math got me in the end. Anyway, it's the same as the Game of the Thrones.
It's less less misogyny.
I haven't done Game of Thrones, so
it's not Flash. That's one thing we do agree on. The books are trash. The books are trash as well. Come at me, George R. R. Martin. Anyway,
great list for the show. Shout out.
Shots fired.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ruth Croft's mum.
Oh yeah, Paparoa. Yeah. So I'd messaged Ruth beforehand. Actually, when we got to Paparoa, we went into Punakaiki Beach Camp, and I just walked in and said, "Hey, you know, what does it cost to set up a? We just want an unpowered site. Park the van. How can we do it?" And he said, "Oh, what are you? You know, just for a night, is it?" And I explained what we were doing, and he said, "Oh, cool. Well, the fastest time for the Paparoa is 4 hours 40. If you're wanting to beat that." And I was like, "No, I'm probably aiming for 10 or 11 hours. But thank you for the boost of confidence." And so Ruth has got the fastest time on that. Anyway, I'd messaged her and asked her if she wanted to run in and join at the end, and unfortunately she couldn't. But same as Jean, she said, "If you feel like stopping by my place in Greymouth for a shower, feel free." And I got back to the van at the end, and we were in Smoko, Blackball, kind of inland from Greymouth.
Yeah.
And the boys had decided that we were going to go down through Canterbury as opposed to the West Coast, right, which was very kind of them because it was an extra hour's drive, but it meant much straighter roads so that I could get better sleep.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. So anyway, I called Ruth and explained that we were going to go inland as opposed to coming down the coast. And she said, "Oh, well, you're welcome to pop by my mum's place and have a shower there." So, and initially mum Claire's her mum's name. Initially Claire wasn't there, and she turned up just as we'd arrived.
Wow. Good old coast hospitality, eh?
Yeah, right.
Shout out. Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. Good on you, Claire.
Yeah. Claire Croft, queen of the West Coast.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling at this point? Like you've done Hefe 75, you've done the Paparoa 53K, on top of everything else. I mean, how are things going physically for you at this point?
Physically, they were going okay. I was pretty excited about the next day. I used to do a bit of car relocation for Track Hopper. It sounds like that's a common theme with your.
Yeah. You are the third person. Yeah. So you are the third person in 3 weeks who's sort of discussed that they have deep visceral tiredness and it kind of like will curl up under their desk. So yeah. Ian, Brooke, and yourself.
Yeah.
And you're the third person that we've had on. So there's Adam Keane, Brooke, and you who do the root burn relocation. Yeah. And that's for Tony, isn't it?
No. So I did it for Mike and Yuki. Right. So they own Track Hopper.
Yeah.
I think it's Yuki. I'm having a bit of a mind blank at the moment. Yeah, so they own Track Hopper. So I used to live in Glen Orchy for about 9 months. Yeah. I signed a lease there, having no idea how far it was from Queenstown, thinking it was close enough. Anyway, ended up doing a bit of work for them, just relocating a couple of cars, and more for an excuse for a long run than, you know, so for anything else.
How many times do you reckon you've done the root burn?
Probably about 10 times, possibly.
Right. Yeah. So that was going to be day seven. And it's, I mean, it's quote unquote only 32 kilometers, isn't it? So.
Yeah, that was an interesting one when people would ask if we were, you know, are you running the root burn, you're crazy kind of thing. And I'm like, this is, I feel bad for saying it sometimes, but we did it in 7 hours and it was leisurely. So, but it's all relative, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And it's still a great walk. It's, you know, it's still stunning.
It is. And it's my number one recommendation. I think if somebody wants to do a great walk, I think for accessibility, for ease in comparison to something like Milford or Kepler, if you're wanting to kind of start out, I think it is definitely a good place to start, and it sets a high, but it never ceases to fail.
Stunning. So then day eight, you're on the Milford, the notorious Milford track.
So that actually ended up being a bit of a logistical nightmare as well. So we started out at 6 o'clock, and we had a guy from, this was another complete stranger who put his hand up. I put a post on Facebook saying, does anybody want to pick me up from Glade Wharf on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. And his sister tagged him, and I just tagged him. I'd never met him or his sister. I tagged him and said, I heard Hamish Oldglaive is a bit of a legend. So he thought that I must have known him or that I knew his sister or something. So he just said, you're right, I'll do it. Without realizing we never crossed paths at all.
Yeah.
But I felt a little bit bad for that. I feel like I'd conned him into it to a certain extent.
It sounds like, and I mean this with the greatest respect, that you have perhaps a gift of the gab. Like, you're like, I went and I got that sprinter van and the dude at the campsite. And I'm not, there's no criticism there, because I guess you don't know unless you ask. And also if you show up with good intentions, people will generally, you know, come to the party. So I'm not surprised that someone, you know, you've had strangers putting their hand up.
I think you're half right. I mean, it's, you know, I've been in sales for the last 10 years, but at the same time, I think there are a lot more people out there that are a lot more willing to help.
Absolutely.
The rest of the population than people actually think. And I think people are too scared to ask for help. And I guess it comes back to kind of everything is just, you know, the are you okay and mental health and just anything. People actually should be more than willing to just ask for help in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were supposed to be getting this boat ride. What happened?
So the weather packed in and we're a little bit nervous.
And Fiordland.
Are you joking?
Yeah, I know, right? You'd never expect it to rain down here, especially with a bit of wind.
I thought they were putting the dome. Is that the thing?
Oh, the roof on the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
What one's that?
Oh, that it was just an idea.
Put a roof over the whole...
Put a dome on the mill.
Fiordland.
Yeah.
Over Fiordland.
Yeah. No, so...
Opened it up.
Sorry, I put you off, but you... So it started to... It packed up.
So, yeah, it packed up. I'd had a chat with the Hamish a couple of days earlier. We knew the weather was going to be pretty average. He said he's pretty intrepid. He said he'll give it a nudge. So I had confidence that he'd be there, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And we were kind of running. And we had about 3Ks to go until – 3Ks to go with about – and it was about 3:45 when my PLB pinged. And somehow Michelle, my partner, had figured out how to send me a message via my PLB.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which I read, and it said, Hamish is going to struggle to make it to Glade. RJ's boat leaves there at 4. So at this point, my body was actually pretty broken. I was cold. but there was a second wind and something came over me, and that was the fastest 3Ks that I'd done on the entire journey. And we just ran and did those 3Ks in probably 16 to 17 minutes.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Which what day were we? Day 8.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
something came over me there.
Yeah.
And I think, once again, going back to kind of Ross Edgley and what's the pyramid of needs? I can't remember.
It's Maslow's hierarchy needs.
There we go.
Love Maslow's hierarchy. Needs. Yeah.
There was food, there was shelter, and there was warmth 3Ks away, but I had to do it in 15 minutes, and yep. My body was willing. So
yeah. That's right.
That's what we did.
And that's the thing. That's that fundamental drive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Fantastic. So then you get on the boat. People would have been like, what's this joker up to?
There was no one
out of the bush.
Oh, there was the driver, someone else, and there were two other people, and they didn't even know that we were actually getting on the boat. So Eddie had luckily managed to jump on. There was a guy driving around on a little four-wheel drive buggy type thing. Eddie jumped on, offered for me to jump on, and I looked at him like I was crazy. I was 3Ks away from finishing the Milford. I wasn't going to spoil it with that. They drove off, alerted the RJ's boat that we were coming, and Eva, a friend of mine from Wanaka, she's just moved to Christchurch, but her and I ran those last 3Ks like there was nothing else but to do it.
Mm.
Sweet.
Like there was some food at the end of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how far from Milford Sound is Tiano? A couple of hours.
By boat?
No, by...
Yeah, so you get on the ferry to Tiano? Yeah.
No,
to
you Tiano. Don't. You get...
So the ferry from Glade Wharf. So we started at Milford.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we started at Sandfly Point. So we stayed at Milford the night before, caught the boat over to Sandfly Point, ran the Milford. By the way, just to go back to the Milford, that is the grandest scene that I've ever seen. McKinnon Pass.
Yeah.
Right.
On the Milford.
Yeah.
The weather hadn't packed in then. It was windy. We're probably getting 90 to 100K gusts at the top of that. There was a huge group of elderly people kind of in their 60s with huge big packs just getting blown around, which was – I don't know if I should laugh, but it was there was one point where they were too stubborn to kind of crouch or get down close to the ground when there was a gust coming, and I was yelling at them to get down, and one of them didn't listen, and she got blown over. So,
oof,
that was interesting. But we carried on. So that was absolutely stunning. The view up there was something like I'd never seen before. And living in Queenstown, I've obviously seen some pretty cool views.
Yeah.
So, got to the RJ's boat. Caught that to the Tiano Downs, and there we all jumped in the van. It was only 4 o'clock, so it was still pretty early. It was about 4:30 by then. Drove to Tiano, went and got Thai food. It was my first meal out. Went and got Thai, and then went back to the place it was staying and just hit the hay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that for the Thai restaurant in Tiano? Isn't it called Tied Up?
No, it's called Tiano.
That's it. Sorry. Oh. I knew that there was a pun there.
Yeah.
Compulsory.
Tied Up's actually in Oriwa.
Ah.
And
Tied Up.
Yeah, I know.
I must have been. I used to live in Whangaparoa, so I must have been up there.
Yeah. So it's like calling a barbershop like Curl Up and Die or something, you know? Like it's so, so bad. That's, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And then on day 9, had you ever done the Kepler before?
No.
What a treat.
Well, funnily enough, for some reason, my brain had told me if there's a race on it, it can't be that exciting. I don't know. That was my logic.
Yeah.
And I was kind of happy because it's the one that I'm most excited to go back to and run.
Mm.
It just seems like the most runnable, great walk. Like once you're up on those ridge lines, you feel like, I was doing 6-minute Ks and I felt like I was flying. I felt like I was Kilian Jornet, like along those ridge lines and then down into... Iris Bernhardt, and that was something special.
Stunning,
eh? And you talk about that sort of sense of when you're up on the ridge and you look back and then you can see the fjord. You just such an amazing.
You can see the lake,
it's incredible.
And it's just at the ridge, like there's those drops both sides, and I've always wanted to find something like that. I've never been able to find something that's such a distance. What is it? Maybe five. Anywhere between 500 meters to a kilometer of just pure ridgeline running with huge drops both sides. I mean, the track's wide enough to be completely safe, but narrow enough to feel like,
yeah,
as you say, you're flying.
Mm. Wow.
So you
how long did you take to do that?
Well, how long was Kepler? I think it was about 10 hours. Awesome. No, it must have been more than that. So I'm going to double check. But that was quite funny because as we got to Irisburn, I was after obviously the high of the ridge lines, and then there's a super runnable section from Irisburn to I can't remember.
Rainbow Reach or something.
No, Motoro.
No, yeah, to Motoro, that's the one. Yep. That's super runnable. And I was getting quite excited, and I put a story. For some reason, we had a bit of reception on the Kepler, and I put a story up showing my excitement to doing 6 minute Ks or 6 minute Ks.
Nick minute.
Sorry.
Nick minute.
Yeah, exactly. And then about an hour later, I put another video up going, I think we might have gone a little bit too hot, a little bit too early. so we'd slowed down to about 8 minute Ks, and towards the end, I was just walking. I was back to walking again.
Yeah.
It's a difficult, having had two epic bummers in that section, it's difficult. It's not an easy run.
Especially after that downhill. Yeah, like the downhill absolutely. From the top really fries your quads. It was surprisingly, it was steeper than I thought it was going to be.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really spicy.
So it took, Kepler took 9 hours, 51 minutes.
Oof, fantastic.
That's a decent Kepler time.
Decent Kepler, especially after everything else.
Yeah.
So by now you must be really smelling the barn.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We. The only thing that was going to stop us was bad weather, getting a flight over to Stewart Island, really. Yeah.
So you finish back in Tiano, and then what have you got to do to get to Stewart Island?
Jump in the van and drive to Invercargill. So we had a few people meeting us. Michelle was driving down. Josh's partner, she was driving down. We had another guy coming down that I'd met. I'd just met him a year earlier at a dinner party with some friends, and we'd never actually kind of caught up since. And he said, "Oh, can I join you on Stewart Island?" And I said, "Yeah, you're welcome to. The more the merrier." But I didn't expect him to, spend $180 on flights. And then about 10 minutes later, I got an email saying that he was booked onto the flight.
Oh, wow. Sweet.
I was like, okay, that's fantastic. So that's good fun. Drove down and booked a hotel for the night, and the boys stayed with Hamish, the guy who had offered to pick me up from Glade Wharf. And so they stayed there, and Michelle and I stayed at a hotel, and we got up the next morning, drove to the airport, kind of packed everything up, and I was pretty exhausted. But once again, I knew that it was, it was meant to be 32 Ks. So I knew one foot in front of the other, it should take 6 to 7 hours, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
How was that feel? I mean, and this is the thing, what I really like about you, there's a real sort of authenticity to your endeavor, and that you weren't, not fanging it. Like, that's the thing, like, you're just putting one foot in front of the other. You were getting it done. You were just there in the moment. You know what I mean? How was that last 32K? I mean, how was the body, the reflection, the mental state? What was going through your mind?
It was good. We moved quite a bit quicker than I thought we were going to. I was pretty comfortable at that point. I think my body had figured out what it had to do. And AJ was good company, and he was good banter. So we had a bit of a laugh, and we did the first 10K pretty quickly, probably about an hour 45 possibly. And I messaged the crew and said, "Oh, we're going to be finished pretty early, probably about 1:30, maybe 2 o'clock." And they'd booked tickets to Olver Island.
Hmm.
Yep. And the next ferry left Olver Island at 2:15.
Oh.
So we realized that they weren't probably going to be at the finish line, which after all of the logistical planning and after everything that we'd been through and managed to solve, to not be together at the end was humorous, to be honest with you. Very, very anticlimactic. AJ and I kind of finished and we just gave each other a high five and then caught the taxi back into town. And it wasn't until I actually saw everybody that I was like, okay, now we've done it. Like, once the crew was back together, then we would.
Yeah. The final piece of the puzzle.
I love that. Like, and I don't want to take away from the achievement because it's an amazing achievement. You know, the Tour Divide the ride across the United States from Canada, and it finishes at Antelope Wells.
Yeah.
And then you just finish. You just get there. You get to like a phone box. You've got to ring the dude and go like, "I finished." And he's like, "Sweet as, quick." And that's it. You know, like, and it's this incredible adventure.
Yeah.
And that's the end. Yeah. There's something beautiful in that just like that stoic, like you know, you talk about that stoic mindset. You can control what you can control. You can't control what you can't control.
Yeah.
And you move on, you know, you move through it.
And I had a good chat with Michelle afterwards, and she wouldn't have done. She was the only person that I had a chat with about that kind of incident. And she wouldn't have done it any different. I mean, we all spent $180 on flights over.
Yeah,
yeah.
The last thing they would have wanted to do was just sit around and wait for me to fly out.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have wanted that either. So
no. So they actually they. I mean, the idea was that it was an adventure for everybody. And I said to the boys halfway through, I was like, I genuinely don't know how I could ever repay you for everything that you've done. And Josh just looked at me and he said, "Finish it. Like that's it." You know, that it was as much of an adventure for them as it was for me. And I think, you know, playing on that as well, I think a lot of people around me I'm almost sure of it, were more excited about me finishing it than I was.
Sure.
And the reason being is because for me, the excitement was in the adventure. Yeah, I was going to be the first person to do the 10 great walks consecutively and so on and so forth and whatever else. But the true beauty and the true joy was in actually doing it and not thinking about what was going to come after it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you took all those people with you, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were more and more people that tagged along the way. And it was, it was a beautiful thing with the amount of people that actually kind of got on board.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow. And so where are you based?
So I live in Cromwell.
Yep.
Yeah. Michelle lives in Frankton. So I spend a lot of time kind of jumping to and from.
Yep.
And I do a lot of work in Dunedin. So I spend a lot of time over there as well. So pretty mobile.
Yeah. Wow. Was it back to work on Monday kind of thing? Or?
It was back to work on Tuesday, which was probably a bad idea. I don't know. I was probably a little bit more exhausted than I could have been. I don't know how Brooke went straight back to work. That's madness.
Yeah. She's a nurse. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She just rolled up the sleeves.
Get it. Which is just fantastic.
I
admire her for that. So we're off to Kerikeri, which is where I'm actually born and bred, Bay of Islands. This week coming, we fly on Wednesday just to see the family and then get back to it, you know, full time, get back to it the week after that.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. Brilliant. And I mean, is it too, I don't want to already be thinking about the next thing, but I mean, do you have anything else that you'd like to, I mean, is this sort of something that you'll sit on for a while? Obviously, you know, we're all here for the foreseeable. Goals to look at overseas, back to adventure, back to obstacle racing when you can, or are you thinking about something else?
I think I've tied my shoes up. What is it? Hung my boots up with racing. I've really found an enjoyment in, and it sounds, I don't know, it's interesting, but I find a lot more enjoyment in first known times. I think there's the kind of the explorer, adventurer, expedition side to it, because you're doing something that nobody else has ever done before. But B, for a more, I guess, a more selfish aspect of it, is fastest times can always be beaten. First times can't.
Yeah, so true.
That kind of excitement to it. But at the same time, with first times, you know, you can take a little bit more time, and I think you can enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Whereas fastest times, you really want to be pushing it, you know, pushing your absolute limits. So, but no, for the near future, I'm pretty tired of ultra distance running kind of competitively or for anything. So at the moment I'm on a mountain bike and eyeing up kind of some 12 hour mountain biking races towards the end of the year.
Cool.
Brilliant.
See what happens there. Tail ending Northburn for Terry Davis on the first 50K. Just doing some. I'll still be volunteering. I love the community. So
yeah, fantastic. Look, I mean, it is a long weekend. You're tired. You know, you've been very generous with your time. So, and I just feel it just makes me want to go and do the 10 great walks. You know, like if Kepler, done Kepler a bunch, that's the only one that I've done. You know, and you think, gosh, there's so much out here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and kind of.
So that's the thing, you're inspiring plenty of other people as well with what you've done.
Thank you.
And one of the things that we, you know, we're going to ask you that question now, and we ask it of everyone who comes on Dirt Church Radio, and that's Andrew Robinson, what's your greatest run ever?
So my greatest run ever is purely for the feeling that I had when I was running was just an absolute and complete freedom. I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and I've always kind of run with some pretty crazy outfits. Terry Davis mocks me for them, which is, you know, that'll give you an idea as to how crazy they are. I was wearing some kind of zebra striped tights. I was wearing a compression shirt, long sleeve, and a, you know, the road workers hats, the big bright orange ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had one of them. And in America, when you run, you, especially backcountry, you're meant to run with a bell to scare off all the bears and leopards and mountain lions and all the rest of it. But I didn't have a bell, so I had my phone playing. The three songs that I remember were Shakira, 50 Cent, and Queen, Fat Bottom Girls. Wow. But I remember just bombing down the hill with my looking so out of place, all these people hiking, and I was just bombing down the hill listening to these songs with my my compression top rolled up, so it looked like a crop top. And I just felt completely free, not judged at all, like I just couldn't care, you know, nobody could care less. And it was just, yeah, that's my greatest run ever.
Well, it is the home of rugged individualism, isn't it? Now, I have a question on your tights. Were they full length? Were they shorts? Yes. Wow.
No, full length.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So
funnily enough, in conclusion to that story, I mean, I felt so free, like nobody was ever going to recognize me or ever, you know, I was just, it was then and there and that was it. The next night I was actually at a bit of a conference type thing. There was a guy, Conrad Anker, who's a explorer. He was doing a talk and I had somebody approach me and said, do you mind if I ask, you weren't running down. I just looked at him. I was like, nah, can't have been me.
Nah, not me.
You weren't the man having a manic episode on the
singing to Shakira.
With the orange hat and the skin tight crop top. Definitely wasn't me. I saw him actually.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you for your kōrero around, you know, your achievement, your first known time. We could probably do another whole podcast on the fact that your crew member's name is Eddie Vedder. It really does. I've got questions. How many times was he pulled over? Like, was he ever pulled over? And what's your name, sir? Eddie Vedder.
No.
Okay, so get out of the van. No, my name's Eddie Vedder. Get out of the van, sir.
Yeah. No, didn't happen that I'm aware of.
Right. Brilliant. All right. Well, Andrew, thank you so much. And please take care and rest well and heal well. And hopefully see you soon.
Look forward to the next adventure.
Thank you very much. Are you guys down here for anything anytime soon? You're not coming down for Northburn or?
No. Not so we continually, like, Ruth Croft has a, I can feel her sort of disapproving gaze boring into my soul about the fact that we've never been, I've never been to the West Coast and ran.
Okay.
Run. So it's something that we want to do. But, you know, time and tides are against us.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, let me know when you're there. I might join you.
Fantastic. Maybe we can catch up for a shower and a smoothie.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a common gift.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Andrew.
Awesome. Cheers, guys.
Cool. I like you. I love his finish. There's not like a banner. There's not like a, and it's like Ellie talked about with the greatest run ever as well, isn't it? You know, there's not like the champagne bottles and the big finish line. It's just cool.
just Eddie Vedder sitting in the van drinking a warm bottle of champagne.
No, he's not back from the,
he's sitting in the van. Yeah, he doesn't have to be looking in his rearview mirror.
That's right. Look, thank you, Andrew. That was an amazing conversation. Really, really appreciate you staying up late for us to have a chat about it. Thank you so much.
thank you to all of you for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio and email dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
You can find us on all the podcast platforms. Like and subscribe if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com. Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you, and you can read them on the website too.
Yeah. Thank you to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Spring Energy and CLE. And thank you to our Patreon supporters.
Patrons,
yeah. And Wild Things.
Chakao. And thanks to our editor, Kieran. And we've got an amazing show lined up for you next week because we're going to Tarawera.
We'll be on the road, thanks, Patreon patrons, with some gear.
Taking down our hovercraft. So tune in then. Ka kite and happy Waitangi Day.
Ka kite. Thanks, Rigby.